My name is Ronald Dobry, and I'm 60. And I go way back in this community. My great grandparents, and I'm speaking on my mother's grandparents, František and Marie Novák Tichý, came to this county. It's now Knox County, but at that time it was called Loki Kur. The name was changed in 1970 or 1873 because the people had some difficulty pronouncing the name Loki Kur, which is French for running water, and it was named after the stream, the Niobrara River, and which is what the word Niobrara means in the Indian tongue. At any rate, my great-grandparents lived in the town of Jankov u Votice. Now this is in the old Tabor district, but it would now be in the Benešov district. And the whole family was born there. There were six, and my great-grandfather was a landowner. He had a small estate, which probably meant he was the oldest son. And he sold that, and he bought a freighting business. He probably hauled freight from the railroad stop to the smaller villages, which did not have railroads at that time. And then in 1867, they decided to come to this country, so he sold his business, and that, of course, paid for the passage. They started out from Bremen, I think it was. I'm not quite sure of that. But anyway, there was sickness on board, and they had to stop in London. And so they were there in quarantine for some weeks. And when they finally did sail, it was on an English ship, and that's how they wound up in Canada. Now, it was a boat under sail. It was not a steamer. And according to what my great uncle said, they had to catch water in the sail. And from this, somehow, my great-grandfather caught typhus, I guess it was. And so when they got to Canada, they were there for some weeks. And then finally, this was in 1867, I guess. I mean, I can't tell exactly the chronology of this. And then they came down to Chicago, which I would suppose have been their original destination, because Chicago was really the one of the major centers for Czech culture here. St. Louis was perhaps earlier than Chicago. I think St. Louis had the first Czech newspaper, but then Chicago developed rather quickly in the 1870s, 1860s. They had St. Wenceslaus Church, St. Václav's Church, and that was the first church. By and large, by the time of the Great Fire of 1871, I think people were starting to move into areas other than that central area. And then when that fire came along, they built another, let me see, that was St. John Nepomuk. And there was also St. Procopius, and I can't remember exactly. St. Václav's, I think, was built in 1864. Now, there are a few stories about the Bohemian residents of Chicago during those years. We are fortunate here in Knox County to have had quite a few people who wrote about the Czech experience. They were people who read books. One of them was J.V. Holacek, and his his father, in fact, wrote the story of his life. And then there was Joseph P. Chedjevi, whose father, Joseph Chedjevi, also wrote his autobiography. And then there were a couple of other people, too. One of the problems, it's not a problem with the early writings, the one by Joseph Chedjevi and the one by John Holacek, because they were written during the 19th century. However, when J.V. Holacek and Joseph P. Chedjevi came to write, it was during the second decade of the 20th century, and they had already been in this country 50 years, and you cannot expect details to be all that clear. But anyway, there were references to a tavern run by a man named František Bém, and this is where apparently the local part of the Česká Osada met. And there was, interestingly enough, a man named Schindler. Now, Schindler was a Bohemian German, and he was actually kicked out of the club because he insisted on talking German, and only German. But nonetheless, he was one of the first group to come here, and he was really probably the first man to have a farm here where the Verdigris Creek runs into the Niobrara. And that first group would have come, I think, in July of 1869, and not very many of them stayed here. They came through South Dakota, and most of them thought the land around Yankton was more promising, and they settled. In fact, it was. it was better agricultural land, and so they settled there, and that was the beginning of Czech settlement in South Dakota. I don't know if you know this, but a man named Dvořák or Dvořáček wrote the history of the Czechs in South Dakota. And the book here is in the library, and I think probably the State Historical Society would have that that book too. So there were two other groups who came out later that year, but the first big group came in March and April of 1870, and they started out from Chicago. They could get only as far as Sioux City by rail, so there they got wagons and teams. I don't know exactly how many of them there were. I don't know all the names of the old settlers, but anyway, my great grandparents were there. They had four of their children, Albert Wojtek, who at that time, let's see, would have been 16, František, who was 14, my grandfather would have been 12, and then their sister Josefa, who married a man named Jivish, who would have been 9. And it was, they started out late in March, which they figured was spring. However, it started raining, and they stopped at the home of a German farmer overnight, and he urged them not to go on. Rain turned to snow. Sioux City is directly east, but they were afraid to cut directly across the prairie because there were no landmarks. So they hugged the inner bank of the Missouri River, and it took them 2 weeks to make that journey. And the children and the wives huddled under feather quilts, and the men slept underneath the wagon. Let me think a moment now. John Tikhovsky and his wife had a 6-month-old child, and this child died on the way. And they finally, after 2 days, they buried it in the hills across the river from Yankton. And so they then, well, that's how they finally got here. And they all took homesteads. Most of them, I think, a good part of them in Niobrara Township, but also they spread out along the Niobrara River into what became the Fisherville settlement, and then down the Verdigris, down as far as Verdigris. In fact, the first homesteader here on this site was named Joseph Mlade, and this became the core of Verdigris in 1887. Grandfather Tihi had a homestead in, I think it was Section 4 of Sparta Township. Now, he had a section there. His oldest son, he had the southwestern quarter. His oldest son, Albert, took the northeast quarter, and then there was I have to get to the two daughters that I haven't mentioned yet. There were two daughters who stayed in Chicago because they had gotten married. They were older. One of them, Marie, had married a man named Joseph Boucher, and the other married a man named Wenzel Baumru, which is a German name. But I think they were, the names on the tombstone, the first names are Bohemian and not German. So sometimes it's difficult to tell, though.
And one quarter of Czechs at one point had a German.
Yeah. The Baumruks did come out in 1874, and they took this quarter section. They proved up on it in 1879, and then they moved into the village of Niobrara, and they were there for only about a year and a half. Baumruk was a carpenter, and so he, but I think they preferred the idea of living in something like civilization, and so they in 1880, probably the fall, they went back to Chicago, and their quarter section was bought by Joseph Chedivi, whose name we already mentioned. And now, in his turn, when my grandfather was 21, he became naturalized because his father had not yet been naturalized. So he wanted to speed up the process. And so he was naturalized by himself, and he took a homestead a couple of miles away. And there still were not that many people out there. And my great-uncle Frank took a homestead. He married a woman she was the daughter of a widow, and she had a brother named Karel, and her mother. Her mother was farming alone, probably with the assistance of my great uncle. But anyway, she and her son were burned to death in a prairie fire in 1878, and so my great uncle Frank had that land, and that was a major part of his property. Great uncle Albert homesteaded too. Great uncle Albert was that's a very interesting story. He married a divorced woman who had a child. They were separated before the child was born, and I think the divorce was, papers were not actually taken out until after my great uncle had married over in Dakota Territory. So, of course, my great uncle handled the divorce proceeding because men did all of this. Men normally would go to the courthouse and they would get the marriage license. And they would supply all of the information. And now, if they didn't happen to know everything about their wives, such as their ages, this great uncle's wife kept changing her name, and every time she married, she got a little younger. But this helped me to identify a group portrait. Because I could see that that there was this woman who was obviously older than her husband, 7 or 8 years older, and so I was able to identify that portrait. Unfortunately, there weren't any other identifications on this. I could identify the three sons. Actually, there were more children. There were 4 or 5 who died of diphtheria. And around 1884, they all went to a school called the Tiki School. And this is not true just of my great uncle Albert, but great uncle Frank's family too. So,
there was a diphtheria epidemic.
Yes. Yes, a lot of children. There were several different diphtheria epidemics, and you have to understand that diphtheria was easily communicated. They had a water pail with a common dipper, and that did it. So, okay, when my grandfather was 22, he married the daughter of a neighbor. Her name was Anna Holland. And she was the daughter of Mate Holland and Marie Pokorny. And they came from the village of Veľký Osek. And they had 4 children. The oldest was Mate Jr. That created some problems because when they got the naturalization papers, their land records, they never did distinguish between junior and senior. The only time it finally happened when they had to have a probate of my great-grandfather's estate. But that's an interesting story in itself. But anyway, my grandmother Anna was the second daughter, and she was... okay, and then there was Marie, who married Václav Uhlíš. And the third was, the final daughter was Alžbeta, who married a man named Emil Kacher. And, in the fall, in November of 1878, Mate Jr. married, and he married a woman named Krupička, who was a cousin to the Krupičkas, who were among the early settlers here. And I don't think you had any of the Krupičkas in, but that would have been an interesting story. Undoubtedly, they knew about Knox County because of the Krupičkas. Okay, so my great uncle and his wife Anna got married, instantly left the country. They came to the United States, and now this was winter, and they, with the help of their relative who would have been the Krupičkas, they built a house, and then the rest of the family came over the next year. My grandparents had 4 children. Well, there were others. I'd better say 5. There was Aunt Bessie, who married Louis Skogan, and she was born in 1881, and Aunt Molly, born in 1889, who married Frank Skogan, his brother. Then there was a long gap, and I think there were some children who died, but until well, in 1898, my grandfather took out an insurance policy, a life insurance policy, and he, of course, named his two daughters and his wife as equal beneficiaries, and I'm sure he didn't expect to have any more children. The next year, they had a daughter named Milada. That was 1899. The last day of January 1901, Milada tipped over a coffee urn and was scalded to death. This was 5 days before Aunt Bessie was married. Aunt Molly was married in 1908, and they took over my grandfather's property. Grandfather, at the age of 47, had moved into town. Actually, people did not have that long an expectation of life. Farming was very hard work in those days. This is a sidelight, but there were lots of young of women, daughters who would have been in their late 20s and would have been considered unmarriageable in Czechoslovakia or Bohemia because they didn't have a dowry or anything, and they were instantly snapped up, every one of them. A school teacher would last only a few months and get married. So then my grandparents moved into the village of Niobrara. Aunt Rosa was born in 1902 and my mother in 1906. My mother's name was Elsie. And grandmother Holland died of cancer in 1918. Of course, this is long before I was born. And my Aunt Rosa was married, I think, she would have been 18, so 1922 was when she got married, and to a man named Charles Liska. And then from that time on, my mother, who was, of course, still in high school, she was graduated in 1923, was in charge of the whole household. Grandfather, I think, had what would probably be called dyslexia now, but he did not like to read. He had gone to school in the United States, in Chicago and out here until he was 18, but he didn't read very well, and his signature is very curious. It's shaky. Here again, next step. My parents were married September 9th, 1930. This was, the Depression had already begun, but they didn't know that what was going to be coming up. Grandfather Tiki died in December of 1931. Again, this was before I was born. Okay, now let me get over to my other grandparents, because they came from the village of Semoshna, which is a few kilometers to the north of Pilsen. And father was named Thomas, and I can't remember what his mother's name was. I only got hold of the marriage certificate a few months ago, and I haven't memorized her name yet. But she died young, probably when my grandfather was 8, and then he went through finished up with the Obecna Shkola, and when he was 14. And he went to work in the coal mines to the northeast of Pilsen, and he worked there. First he carried water, and then he was actually digging coal, and then he was born in 1864, and then in June of 1885, when he would have been eligible for the conscription, he left. Now, what happened was that the railroads were advertising in the country. They offered passage to the United States in exchange for 6 months of work. And my grandfather undoubtedly took advantage of this opportunity. So, hello, Ethel.
Hello.
So he wound up working for the Union Pacific Railroad in North Bend, Nebraska, and which is west of 15 miles west of Fremont. And in 1887, he got married. Now, that brings in my grandmother. Her maiden name was Edith, and her mother's name was Eva Ksiz. And her father's name was Jan Eret, and he came from Manyechin. Actually, he may have come from the village of Planje. I haven't really nailed that down. The reason for this, now grandmother was born in 1886. She was sent, I don't know if she knew my grandfather, but she was sent to to her cousins in the United States because she was pregnant. So, and somehow or other, she wound up in Saunders County. I don't know how they happened to meet, but at any rate, they married and they had. Well, together, I guess, 9 children. There was one who was born dead. I know nothing about that. But my grandparents lived in Saunders County until the end of February 1907. They never owned a farm. They lived on 3 separate rented farms, and the last one was on the road to Cedar Rapids, which was their mail address. And although they considered Morris Bluff their hometown. And now they had a friend named Brozovsky, Frank Brozovsky, and he in 1902 he came up to Knox County. I don't know why. He bought a farm northeast of Verdigris, and in 1906, probably, he decided he wanted to move into town. He wasn't in good health, and so he persuaded my grandparents to come out here and take over that farm. And undoubtedly, he expected them to buy the farm. They came out by train. They took the livestock, the farm tools, the whatever there was, the household goods, and the nine and a half. My last uncle Joe was born about 4 months later, yeah. And so they all came here by railroad. As I say, Mr. Brozovsky probably figured that they would buy this land, but there wasn't any, wasn't a sufficient quantity of water there, and so my grandfather actually bought a farm 10 miles west of Verdigris. They had saved their money, they had it in banks in Morris Bluff, and when the time came, they had what, $10,000 or $15,000 to buy their farm outright. Yes, so.
Did they talk about any social life which existed at the time?
Oh well, my dad and his uncles played musical instruments. They had barn dances. There were some dance halls. The one at Knoxville, for instance. And in fact, they lived in it's almost too much to call it a community. But it was called Yellen. It had a post office, and there was a store there. And there was a Bowery there. They had Bowery dances in the summer, and there was also a place called Hall, Nichols Hall, after the proprietor. And eventually, during the 1920s, my uncle Charlie Liska and my aunt Rosa ran the store for a few years. That may be how my parents met, because after all, here my dad was 10 miles west of Verdigris, and my mother was in Niobrara, but she did come out to visit her sister.
What about schooling? You know, it was quite important, it seems, to the Czechs here to send their kids to proper schools and prepare them for the future.
Okay. My parents, my parents, now this is a mixture. On my mother's side, her mother's family was probably Protestant, at least that her tiki grandparents were Catholic, but they were kind of lapsed Catholics. Many people simply forgot about the church, and of course this goes back to the time of the 30-year war, and when Catholicism was reimposed, but not very, wasn't received with great enthusiasm. There were some very pious Catholics, and of course they became the pillars of St. Wenceslaus Parish. And we never had a parish church here in Verdigris. There was a parish church, St. Ludger, in Creighton, and some of the people did send their children there. My mother went to town school, and she went to high school there. My dad and his brothers and sisters, with two exceptions, just went through a grade school. They went to country school, and now you have to realize that they didn't have the same 9 month terms that they have now. They had several terms of varying lengths. And because, of course, the boys couldn't be going to school in the spring when there was plowing. Let me see now. I suppose a couple of my uncles were already out of school by the time they got up to Saunders County. Dad would have gone to a school northeast of Verdigris, but starting in 1910, he went to a school which was just across the street from the Yellen store, and it was a mile and a half from our home. And when he and his sisters were 18, well, then they got their eighth grade diplomas, and that ended their schooling, except for Uncle Amo, who was the brother who was 2 years older than Dad, and Uncle Joe, who was the youngest. And Uncle Joe was a school teacher for some time. He later worked for the county welfare department. Uncle Amo joined the Marines during World War I, and he kept a diary, which I have, of his life then, and there are all sorts of pictures, his uniform, a gas mask taken from a dead German soldier with blood on it, and some other things. I have a wooden chest with these things. The other brothers, Uncle Jim, who was the half brother, I want to bring you up on one little thing. I found out that in Saunders County there were Arretts, and that kind of made me wonder. Now, actually, my aunt told me that she was sent to her cousin in Ypsilanti, Michigan. But I know absolutely nothing about Ypsilanti, Michigan. I do know that there were Arretts in Saunders County, and that would at least explain how they happened to be there together. Uncle Jim settled in the area of Broken Bow in Custer County. Broken Bow Custer County is famous because it had this photographer who went around photographing people in front of their sod house, Butcher. And there's now a book of Butcher's painting or photographs. And he settled there. Actually, it was in the area of Sumner. And he was married in 1911, and they lived there for a number of years. Then they did live in the Verdigris area on various farms from 1914 to 1931, and then during the Depression they went back to the Sumner area and spent the rest of their lives there. Uncle Frank married a neighbor. Her name was Ristarchik. They settled down on his father-in-law's place, and so they lived there. And all right, two things happened. Mr. Ristarchik died in 1931, and then Aunt Stacy died in 1934, and so Mrs. Ristarchik stayed there to help take care of the four daughters, who all eventually went off to Omaha. So, Carrie was married, again, I suppose she was 21. There's some debate as to exactly when she was born. She had to a man named Vakoch. She was, she had a child. That child died, and then she died a year later. And let me see then. Now, Uncle Anton married twice. The first marriage was quite unhappy, but finally his wife did him the favor of running off with her latest paramour, and so then he got a divorce. And then he married a woman with whom he was much happier. you talk to a man named Fred Frank. Okay, that Fred Frank's sister, Bessie, was Uncle Anton's first wife. So, actually, the Frank people were very nice about it. I mean, she was clearly at fault. So, but anyway, he married a woman named Helen Herbeck, and then they lived happily ever after, and he lived to be 90. Let's see, Uncle Emil never married. He died at 75. Dad, who was born in 1897, died March 29, 1977. They had one child, me. And let's see, then Anne. Anne was born in 1897 when Grandmother Dobry moved into town. My grandparents moved into town in 1930 so Dad could take over the farm when they were married. And then Grandfather Dobry died in 1932. So I only knew one of my grandparents, and Grandmother Dobry died in 1940 when I was 7. But I did talk Bohemian with her, and I could talk Bohemian as well as English perhaps until I went to school, and then I stopped speaking Bohemian. But I'm a very good linguist, and I never forgot the language. I could understand when people were talking. But of course, when Grandmother died, that took away the reason for my grandparents speaking Czech. So, except when they wanted to say something that they didn't want me to understand. So, we kids have our own tricks.
Sure. Was it Was it important? Was the check language important to the people?
Yes. Okay. And let me just finish off about the school. I went to this school, the same school. Well, actually, it was not the same school. They built a new school, I think, the year after Dad left the school, that is in 1919. And that was, it's a stone school. It's kind of unusual, and I went to that through the eighth grade. They had Czech schools where the kids learned Czech, and both my parents studied Czech. I think probably Dad was taught by a woman named Anna Yellen, and she taught a number of these classes, and I don't know where my mother taught Bohemian, but she learned Bohemian very well. They had acting companies that put on these plays, and mother took part in these. So she talked Bohemian. Well, they both talked Bohemian quite well.
Did they use it together?
I wouldn't really say so, again, unless they were saying something they didn't want me to hear, or sometimes they would be talking with old Bohemians who spoke the language better than they did, who spoke English or Czech better than English. So, but all of my dad's brothers and sisters, I didn't really know my mother's sister, but I knew all of Dad's brothers and sisters, and they, of course, spoke English. They went to school in Sparta Township, not Sparta Township, in Saunders County, and now this was a mixed school. You'd get kids from various nationalities, perhaps German, perhaps Swedish, going to these schools, and so naturally the kids learned English. That was their common language. So that was the real melting pot there. Yeah. So
I'm asking just because in some Czech communities it seemed that it was very important to learn English as fast as possible, and also that the kids would speak English so that they could continue some kind of an advancement, because of course that was the primary language.
Yes.
In some communities, it seems that the people were very keen on preserving Czech.
Mm-hmm.
They would teach Czech during Sunday schools and afternoon schools and Saturday schools. So that's why I asked the question.
Yeah. In a way, this could have been a self-contained community. These people could have come to the village of Rüdigri, and there would have been Czech-speaking clerks in all of the stores. Mm-hmm. And the older people. I don't think my grandmother Dovry spoke much English, but she had her friends. There were neighbors there that she could talk Bohemian with, and of course with her children. And so on and so forth.
So Czech was not, perceived as an important thing to preserve.
They wouldn't have had school, Czech schools, if they hadn't. I imagine the lodge people were very keen on this. They kept. Let me see. The lodge was strictly Bohemian speaking until the 20s. Now they developed a lodge American for it was for the children of Czechs who didn't really speak Czech all that well. Now that lodge was eventually dissolved, and then they started. They didn't require that all of the business of the lodge be conducted in Bohemian. So, the Bratovský věstník, their publication, started carrying articles in English, and that is the things that had to do with official business, the conventions and that sort, in one part in Bohemian and one part in English. Now they were still doing this in the 1960s, and when I wanted to renew my knowledge of Czech, why then that was one of the things I would read the Czech and refer back to the English for the words I needed, and that was my second attempt. I also went through a Czech grammar that was years before, but since I was a linguist, I could pick those things up, and this doesn't mean that I would attempt to speak it, because I wouldn't, first of all, I would feel at a loss if I didn't have all of the words at my command that I needed, because I have many things to say, and I would hate to try to put myself within those limits. Now, I know German well enough to take that chance, because I think I would remember all of the words I needed. French I don't know quite that well, and besides, the French are so fussy about correct use of grammar. So, I found, now I've done some translating, and I find many of these things come back to me. But so much of the Czech that my parents spoke related to household objects, that sort of thing. And now that is not the sort of thing you pick up when you study a language such as German. You don't use words like that. You are more apt to remember abstract words. And that again, I didn't have for Bohemian. So, but I did manage, translation I can manage quite well. I have even managed, because I knew the German written language. Now, if you go back into the 19th century, you find this slightly modified German script used to write Bohemian. And this is wearing.
Kdybych se vás teď zeptala česky, máte bratry a sestry?
I was about to say niet.
Ne.
Ne.
Vy jste sám. A jak se jmenovala vaše maminka?
Elsa. What was that name? Eliza, that famous woman from the
Eliška.
Yes,
Eliška.
That was her. Eduard. Eduard. Yes.
Máte sám děti? Máte vy vlastní děti? Máte děti?
Ne.
Ne? A máte ženu?
Ne.
Ne. Jste sám? Dobře. A jak dlouho žijete ve Verdigu? Jak dlouho už bydlíte ve Verdigu?
Okay, since 1981, I moved in. Yes, I bought my property in 1980 and moved in.
A kde jste bydlel předtím?
Now, once again.
Kde jste bydlel předtím? Where did you live before?
Oh, I lived on a farm. Huh? My father's farm, and then I sold that. And
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. Muchas gracias.
Les encantan los animales.
Pues que se diviertan todos.
Here are the cues for your conversation.
Ir a la ciudad. 2 semanas. Ir al teatro. Visitar el museo de arte. Encantarnos las comedias y los cuadros de Goya.
Now begin the dialogue using the first cue.
El mes que viene vamos a la ciudad.
¿Cuánto tiempo piensan pasar allí?
Dos semanas. Vamos a ir al teatro y visitar el Museo de Arte.
Eso es lo que más les gusta a ustedes, ¿verdad?
Sí, nos encantan las comedias y los cuadros de Goya.
Pues que se diviertan.
Sí, listening passage. You will hear a brief passage about the movie industry in Hispanic countries. It will be read twice. Then you will hear a series of statements about the passage. Circle C if the statement is true, or F if it is false. Answers to this exercise are given at the end of the tape. The following word appears in the passage. Premio. Here is the passage.
El público hispano, por lo general, tiene acceso a una gran variedad de películas, tanto de tema como de procedencia. No es raro ver los últimos éxitos estadounidenses en las pantallas de las grandes ciudades hispanas, y también pueden verse producciones europeas y de otros países. Pero el público hispano también puede ver excelentes películas hechas por hispanos en países hispanos. La industria cinematográfica hispana ha crecido notablemente en los últimos años, y las producciones de la Argentina, España, México, Cuba, el Perú y Bolivia gozan de fama internacional. En 1982, por ejemplo, España ganó el Oscar a la mejor película de habla no inglesa con la película Volver y Empezar, y también una producción española, La Colmena, se llevó un premio en el Festival del Cine de Berlín. La Historia Oficial de la Argentina consiguió un Oscar en 1986. Algunas de las mejores películas hechas en el mundo hispano tienen un tema político-social. Muchos directores usan sus películas para hacer crítica social, para que el público no se olvide de los problemas sociales, económicos y políticos que existen en el mundo de hoy.
Now the entire passage will be repeated.
El público hispano, por lo general, tiene acceso a una gran variedad de películas, tanto de tema como de procedencia. No es raro ver los últimos éxitos estadounidenses en las pantallas de las grandes ciudades hispanas, y también pueden verse producciones europeas y de otros países. Pero el público hispano también puede ver excelentes películas hechas por hispanos en países hispanos. La industria cinematográfica hispana ha crecido notablemente en los últimos años, y las producciones de la Argentina, España, México, Cuba, el Perú y Bolivia gozan de fama internacional. En 1982, por ejemplo, España ganó el Oscar a la mejor película de habla no inglesa con la película Volver a Empezar, y también una producción española, La Colmena, se llevó un premio en el Festival del Cine de Berlín. La Historia Oficial de la Argentina consiguió un Oscar en 1986. Algunas de las mejores películas hechas en el mundo hispano tienen un tema político-social. Muchos directores usan sus películas para hacer crítica social, para que el público no se olvide de los problemas sociales, económicos y políticos que existen en el mundo de hoy.
Here are the true-false statements. Each will be said twice.
1. En los países hispanos solo se ven películas hechas en los Estados Unidos. En los países hispanos solo se ven películas hechas en los Estados Unidos. 2. El público hispano también puede ver películas hechas por directores hispanos. El público hispano también puede ver películas hechas por directores hispanos. 3. En 1986, el Oscar para la mejor película de habla no inglesa se dio a una película mexicana. En 1986, el Oscar para la mejor película de habla no inglesa se dio a una película mexicana. 4. En 1982, dos películas hechas en España recibieron premios. En 1982, dos películas hechas en España recibieron premios. 5. Muchos directores hispanos usan el cine para hacer crítica social. Muchos directores hispanos usan el cine para hacer crítica social.
6. Entrevista. Hablando de diversiones. You will hear a series of questions. Each will be said twice. Answer based on your own experience. No answers will be given on the tape.
¿Qué haces en tus ratos libres? ¿Qué haces en tus ratos libres? ¿Eres aficionado a algún deporte? ¿Eres aficionado a algún deporte? ¿Qué deporte no te gusta para nada? ¿Qué deporte no te gusta para nada? ¿Vas al cine con tal de que alguien te acompañe o te gusta ir solo? ¿Vas al cine con tal de que alguien te acompañe o te gusta ir solo? ¿Conoces a alguien que tenga una casa en la playa? ¿Conoces a alguien que tenga una casa en la playa? ¿Hay un parque zoológico cerca de tu casa? ¿Hay un parque zoológico cerca de tu casa?
D. Y para terminar, una canción. The song Cielito Lindo is popular throughout Hispanic America. And it is well known in some parts of the United States.
De la Sierra Morena, lindo viene bajando un par de ojitos negros, cielito lindo de contrabando. Ay, 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 canta y no llores, porque cantando se alegran cielito lindo.
Here are the answers to the listening comprehension exercise. 1. F. 2. C. 3. F. 4. C. 5. C. Fin de la segunda parte. Capítulo 15.